Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
He kōna e purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, I'm depressed alcoholic comedian James Nokise. A couple of years ago, I had a mental health breakdown which resulted in panic attacks on international flights, stepping in front of an oncoming bus, and eventually showering so long that I began to get a little bit hungry. And that's when I discovered something magnificent. Through the magic of takeaways and running water, it turns out my mental health safe space is eating fried chicken in the shower. And that's how we've ended up here, a mental health podcast on headspace and happiness. This episode, I'll be talking to TV creators Roseanne Liang and Paulina Lau. We'll be talking about parental validation.
The rule is, in Chinese culture, you shit on your own kids and you praise the other kids.
Professional validation.
We could work our asses off and we'll still get some random stranger yelling at us in the street.
And personal validation.
I became addicted to external validation.
Really?
As a kid.
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure that you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us, eating fried chicken in the shower. Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a mental health podcast with me, James Nokise. And today, I am joined by Roseanne Liang and Paulina Lau, who are incredible creatives.
Oh, thank you.
Because the reason I don't pin you down on one thing is because you're doing so many things. Like, the most famous thing right now is probably The Creamery.
Mm-hmm. Just Creamery, not
The Creamery?
Like
just
Facebook, creamery. Drop there.
Did I just say it like one of your uncles would say it? I love your show, The Creamery. Your Samoan uncles are playing.
Wow.
Yeah. How did you know?
Yeah, it's like...
With The Creamery, can you give me a quick... with Creamery. That's the episode.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. You just corrected me like a Samoan auntie.
Yeah. No, Creamery. Was that appropriation?
Because half the Samoan aunties are Chinese. So that
makes sense. Yeah, I was going to say it was more Chinese than Samoan, but it was accurate.
Yeah, it's accurate. That's right. You guys Chinese heritage, is that right?
Yes, yeah. I'm Hong Kong Chinese.
Same.
Yeah.
Cool. And that in Hong Kong, is that like, were you guys born there or born in New Zealand?
Born in New Zealand,
Born in New Zealand. Parents are from there, moved over.
Yeah, cool.
So they've been here for like... Well, my parents have been for like 40-something years.
I think they came in the same way.
Yeah.
Same
boat.
No, that's the same with my parents. A lot of people think like my European is old New Zealand European, but my mum's Welsh. She came over because she met Dad, and Dad was like, come to a magical land.
Really far away.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay.
Yeah, shout out diaspora.
Actually, my mother was like, no, I don't want to.
Because like all I know about Hong Kong is like most Pacific Islanders is Sevens Rugby and a video store's worth of martial arts films from mid-1980s to the early 2000s.
Oh my God, yes.
Like, do I know New Zealand history figures? No.
No.
Do I know action stars from Hong Kong for a 15-year period?
Yeah. Do you know, oh my God, I had this VHS of Jackie Chan's City Hunter.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
The hamburger boobs.
Oh my God.
So what is this? Jackie Chan's really fucking hungry. Oh, sorry.
You can swear. It's fine.
Jackie Chan's really hungry and he's saving this boat, right?
Yeah.
But he's fighting a crime and he's really hungry. So he sees this woman in the pool and he's so hungry that when he looks at her boobs...
They become hamburgers.
They become hamburgers. Like literally hamburgers go boop, 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 boop.
Is that like as a filmmaker? Is that a big inspiration?
City Hunter?
Yes.
It's such a terrible movie.
When you're making your own stories...
hamburger tips.
Yeah. There wasn't a moment during your last Hollywood blockbuster where you're like, Chloe, I've got an idea. We're just riffing.
So this monster's really hungry and...
What do you see?
Oh, yeah, okay. For a moment, no. Absolutely, that's like, not appropriate.
You would have been epically called out, borderline cancelled, but there would have been like 40 to 50 Pacific Islanders. You're like, City Hunter.
Yes, I see it.
So guys, what chicken have you bought?
Is it breast or thigh? Are we breast or thigh people?
I don't know.
I said I was a thigh person.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm much more of a hamburger myself. what have we got? What have we? Let me pass to you. This is your chicken.
Oh, thank you.
That's
1 inch.
How come?
I think. I don't know. I think we can share. We can share.
Okay. All right.
That's the vibe. We've got sauces.
What have you got? Oh, you've got.
I've got the chips.
Oh, right.
You're not.
Wow.
No, absolutely. Okay. Oh, well, you really did become a Samoan, aren't you? You're not going.
No, I'm sorry. This is my one. Sorry.
Are you sick?
Yeah.
Are you not well? Oh, you've got the potato.
Almond.
Wow, this is cool. Look at these chips.
Yum.
That's cool. This is pochara chicken.
No, just poacher.
Poacher.
That's the chicken.
Oh, that's the chicken. Cool.
But it's shaped like an R. I can see your.
You can see how I got there.
See where you went.
How's it been with the success of Creamery? Like, did you expect it? Like, it's a great show, but like, did you expect it to really pop with people? Oh, it's fun. I really like it.
I didn't really think about it because I think with Flat 3, we sort of, it was, this is a mess, isn't it? Was YouTube.
Yeah.
So in some ways it's like you put things out there on YouTube and it's so easy, it'll just get buried and no one will ever find it. And I think I just sort of had that mentality with the show because I thought, oh, well, it's quite late, but, you know, people might find. I mean, there's so much out there to watch all the time. How do you compete for audience? So I didn't really take into account. And so when it did come out and people were talking about it, I was like, oh, this is great. People know it's around. It exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's I don't think anyone, when we made it, we don't expect anything, but I guess we had a hunch that we were making something that was pretty new and different.
Yeah.
And so when people responded in a really positive way, it was I think you've had quite a lot of people coming up to you just in public, right? Can you tell that story about like
The construction
workers.
Oh, that was probably my favourite interaction. So I walk up to work every morning. I have to pass Sky City and there's all the they're doing that big, massive construction. And every morning it's like 6 a.m., just before 6 a.m., walking past. And generally it's the same. Obviously we're all on the same shift, so I see the same people every morning.
Yeah.
And there was one guy. There's one guy I always say hi to, and then there was one morning where it was him and a younger guy. And I was walking up to them, usually I'm on my phone, and then kind of just go, oh, morning, and keep walking. And then the week that Creamery came out, walked past, I was like, morning. And the guy was like, hey, you're on that TV show, eh? And I was like, yeah. I watched it. Cool. Thanks. Yeah. Bye. All right, bye. Have a good day. And I was like, this is the most wholesome interaction
I mean, that's
I've ever had.
From construction workers.
And it's so Kiwi as well.
Yeah, that's like the high low, Kiwi praise.
The low Kiwi.
Yeah.
Just like,
I'll watch it.
I'll take this at 5:50 a.m. in the morning.
For people listening overseas, that's a 5-star review in New Zealand critique. Hey, you're on the Kiwi show. I watched it.
Watched it.
It's good.
I was like, you're not even our demographic. I love it. Yeah. I love you. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was too much.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going to play it cool because they're playing it quite cool.
Yeah.
Like my version of that is actually eating chicken. If I'm in a mall and people like see me in a food court, like that's when people are like, oh, he's going to order chicken. And like people will go, what chicken are you getting? I'm like, you don't look like you watch the show, but I'm not sure yet. And then someone's usually like, oh, is it KFC? And I'm like, hey, man, let's not reinforce the stereotypes.
Yeah, it's not. It's... Give me a chance.
Hey, but also let's not dismiss KFC.
Yeah, depends where I am. But I mean, like, I have that with this show. Like, in terms of where I go, man, this is a silly show. And like, we're doing something, but this is a silly show. And then people go, oh wow. Do you have that with Creamery, where you go like, not say that like it's silly, but it's a comedy.
Silly. It's really silly.
It's silly, man.
Yeah. It's ridiculous in some parts. I thought it was
your character was ridiculous.
I know.
Oh, your character's amazing, though.
It was really intense. Filming it at the time, that was something I remember. There were so many scenes that I was sort of like really in the moment or whatever, and I was like, oh my god, this is so intense. And then I watched it back and I was like, what this is so silly. I was like, this is ridiculous. And I get the lightness that only came through as a viewer.
Mm.
But when you're in it, I guess for the characters, it's like real high stakes and you're getting chased by some like psycho person with a gun. But then you're watching, you're like, this is silly. But in a good way.
So when you're getting praise, does it feel like it's deserved? Like, how are you guys with praise?
We're not great at, well, it's embarrassing, right? It's really embarrassing. Like, when someone says...
Dan's like, no, it's not.
I hear what you're saying. Like, I feel that's a natural, quite a New Zealand, to a degree, response.
Yeah, it's you want to say thank you. Like, I think I've been, in the same way that someone says, like, let's say your partner says, I love you, right?
Occasionally they do.
And they say, I love you. And you know that you have to say, I love you, too, like within a certain time frame. Because if you pause too long,
yeah,
there's going to be questions.
Yeah.
Right? So if I say, I love you, and you have to say, I love you, too.
Yeah.
In the same way people go, I really love your show.
Yeah.
I know that I have to say, oh, thank you.
Yeah, right. I love your work too.
And sometimes that comes out. Like, if I know them, if they're in the industry and they've, you know, let's say they did a play 2 years ago or I watched their short film that they made and I go, oh, congratulations on that thing you're doing. And they're like, don't do that. Like, I'm...
Just take the... Yeah.
Just accept it and don't try and spread the... I don't know.
How are you with... Because this is something... I have of how are you with family praise?
But what family
praise? I don't get that. What do you mean?
I understand praise? That. Like, my dad said he was proud of me like last year. It's just like
the first time. What?
Yeah, I think so.
Seriously?
Like the siblings. I think he said it over the year. He might have, but it was like in front of the siblings, and they were like,
"Oh yeah,
yo,
that's a big.
You're about to get made a chief or something."
What did you do? What was the?
Oh, I did. I turned into like a 14-year-old. Like, I just went, "Oh, thanks, Dad. Thanks."
But what did you do to get the praise? What had you done?
I think I'd gotten a lot. I'd hustled a lot of work out of lockdown. Because I live in London, and so I'd been trapped here, and he'd watched all of my work evaporate. So I lost like my whole work and career in the UK and that. And he just, but I'd been staying at his place. And so I think he'd finally seen the work.
That you actually
did do. Yeah, yeah. The early mornings, late nights, the constant writing. And so when something propped, and we were having a family dinner, I think it was my sister's birthday, though.
She's like, my birthday. Excuse me.
Time and a place.
Yeah, right.
But now's not the time. Have you guys had the awkward parent proud love thing?
I think my mum. Yeah, in the last few years.
Yeah.
But both my parents have been like proud of you, and I'm sort of just like, okay, thanks, and then I just like scuttle off.
Yeah.
Or sort of just like, oh yeah, thanks, because I think verbal affirmations are not really a thing.
Yeah.
In, well, definitely for like maybe Chinese parents.
Totally.
The rule is in Chinese culture, you shit on your own kids
yeah.
and you praise the other kids. So so say we're like kid friends and Roseanne's at our house.
Yeah.
Your parent will be like, look at Roseanne. Look at her helping around the house. Why can't you be more like her?
What?
You
know,
that was that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then say Roseanne's mum's there. She'll be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Pauline's amazing. But Roseanne, she's terrible.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's just this sort of like kid off.
Yeah.
I don't know, of who's got the worst kid.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's very like it's humble to a ridiculous degree.
Yeah.
Play humble, would you say?
Yeah, almost. Because there is a sort of like... You have to sort of like keep appearances up. It's that thing. There's a way to do things and you just follow the rules.
Yeah.
So the verbal praise is not really, I don't know, at least that's what it was like.
Yeah, I don't get it. But I think what the message that the parents have been receiving over the years is that they should show their love sometimes. So they'll try and be like, okay, I'm
not
proud
too
of you.
Often.
I'm proud of you. And you're like, thank you. Let's not do this.
Are you though?
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Share the food with your parents, but maybe not the shower.
Belina, when you're saying that, I'm going, oh yeah, Pacifica is a lot like that too. But the mum will be vocal. And like, even when they're doing the hate or something, or they're ripping the piss out of you, there's kind of like a, like, do you get a sense of the underlying love?
Or,
Yeah, it's not serious. It's not done in a like, a, you're terrible. It's just sort of a more, it's playful.
And it's only with your family. Like, you can only rip your family.
Like, yeah. You can't rip other people's family. No. You have to only praise others and rip your own family.
And then can I ask, how are your dads with emotion? Having just told you about like mine taking 18 years. Like, but like, how are your guys' dads?
I think similar.
Can they do it?
And I don't know. Can they? My dad's more emotional than my mum. So he was probably more vocal. He was the first to be more vocal.
Yeah.
But that was probably not until I was like 18. Yeah.
Why?
I was leaving on a gap year to England for a year.
Oh, right.
And at the airport, they were like, I love you. And I was like, what? I was like, okay, bye. Weird, gross.
We're not Americans.
Oh. It was really like, almost not confronting. But they'd just never said it really before. They might have said it like once or twice, but as an adult, I don't think I'd heard it that much.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's because I'm leaving for like more than a week kind of thing, more than school camp.
Yeah.
Because I remember when, I think it was about 22, 23, I remember a really clear, subtle but clear shift in that I think my parents, because my parents were splitting up at the time as well, and my mum was definitely sort of, you know, she's obviously going through a lot of grief and it was really awful for her and stressful for her. I mean, but for both of them, but she really was a bit more sort of emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there were times she would say things that I would sort of think, you shouldn't say that you shouldn't be saying that or you shouldn't be thinking that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of the first time I felt like I was going, I wouldn't do that if I was an adult.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this switch of like, we're both adults and we're different and I'm able to look at your actions as a person and an adult rather than as like my mum, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was suddenly like, my parents are also adults who make mistakes or they do things that I don't agree with. And I'm now in a position where I can go, I think I'd do it differently. But not in like a condescending way or patronising way. It was just this moment of realisation where I was like, I think that shift is starting to happen where, like, we're no longer kids and the things that they'll talk to us about are changing.
Yeah.
And they're not hiding things or, like, trying to keep it on the D-low.
Because, Paulina, how old were you when your parents divorced?
I was, like, 23, maybe? 23.
Right.
So quite a bit old. Like, old enough to obviously know that they were happier separately and that was good for both of them. But I think the way everyone deals with grief or trauma or whatever is obviously different. And because at the same time we were in the middle, then my sister and I were quite sort of like, don't try and like pull us onto your side. Like, we're just in the middle of this. Just let us be in the middle.
Yeah.
But that was sort of the first event where I saw them differently. And I was like, saw them as like just humans rather than my parents who are always right.
Do you anything for yourself? Like after, like, if one of them goes off on the other or, if like, do you...
They're both okay now. But in the beginning, I was really... Because my mum was more vocal, I think I was really angry at her for a long time because of it.
Mm.
Because I felt like, can't you see that we're in the middle here as well and we're dealing with it in our own way. And probably this year, last year coming back for COVID... sort of in lockdown together, and it was the first time I was living back with her as an adult. We had a lot of those conversations about what happened, and I think it was the first time when I said, you know, we're involved in a different way. We were also part of it. You just couldn't see it. You know, you're not going to see it because she was obviously one half of it, but we were also there. And it was sort of the first time she went, with a tone that for the first time suggested she was like, I didn't really think about that necessarily. But as if, you know, if you're younger, it's really hard to articulate that.
Yeah.
And you also don't know what you're thinking. But because we were older, we could be like, this sucks. It's bullshit. But then also, you know, can hold that in. And
like, how do you start that conversation? Like, it's a lot easier when you're like, you don't sit down and go, okay, we need to talk.
I think it was actually her. She was having a rant about something. And also last year was really I think she was definitely a bit anxious about...
Everyone was.
So there would be bursts of kind of thing. And also living together as an adult, suddenly. I have my way of doing things, you have your way of doing things, and they are not the same. Trying to navigate that. It would just be outbursts of whatever, and she might just make like a sort of throwaway comment. Mm. And I'd just be like, no, you can't say that. I'd pick up on it.
Yeah.
And it was also like, well... we might as well talk about it here. I've got nothing else to do. Can't go to the supermarket. Can't escape. So I was like, captive audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. I didn't realise my mum loved watching British crime so much, so loudly, and so late. And I don't know if either of you have tried to go to sleep in the middle of a pandemic when a woman is being murdered downstairs.
Oh, my God.
Just like walk down and there's Taggart going, there's been a murder. And I'm like... like, Mum, didn't we watch this in 1998? The first time?
It's also the volume.
Yeah, the volume. Really?
Everything's really loud. And it's got to be an 8. Because I'm like, shh. You know, she's on the phone talking to her friends, telling my lockdown story 20 times. That was it. She's just come back. You know, okay, so she came back on the Tuesday. And then London. London. So she came back, arrived. No, I went to pick her up at the airport. Yep, masks.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, if you tell the story one more time, honestly. But it was like 29. And I was like, shh, your voice is very loud. The TV is very loud. Everything's very loud.
Well, what did you do, can I ask? Because I went for walks. I was very, very lucky.
I've never been more excited about walks in my life. I also went for walks every day, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah. That's a long look.
Walk. Yeah. Yeah. But there was nothing, like, of a day of what? 24 hours, 2 hours is nothing.
True. Yeah. No, look, I love my mum. I love her. I'm very close with her. I walked for 2 to 4 hours. I broke the law. I lived in Wellington. I had nowhere to walk. I just went round the block and went, I wonder if anything's different.
Just go again.
Yeah, there's a cat. I didn't see that cat today. I'm going to look for that cat.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas if you're living with your parents, my main argument is, I will go to the supermarket. No, stay.
Yeah.
Stay.
Yeah,
you are at risk.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll go anywhere. Put myself on the line.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll do it for you. I will go to Pack&Save.
Yeah. The biggest fight my mum and me had was when I left the shopping list at home, but just remembered it. And she just wandered into the supermarket with the shopping list and gave it to me in front of people. Like, here you go. And then just went for a walk around and then sat in the car waiting to drive me home. And I was just looking at her what are you doing? And then we got into the car. I got into the car with the shopping, and there was just a silence. And then I went to my mum. Did you have fun in there? You have a nice time? And she took a breath and went.
She'd gone clubbing and she wasn't allowed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'd caught her.
And I took that tone. And in my mind, that was the right tone. And in her mind, I gave you life. And she said to me, I birthed you. And I went, we'll talk about it at home. She said, you will walk home if you keep that tone.
Never forget.
I don't care if it's a pandemic. I don't care if it's winter. You will get out of this car and walk home think about what you just said.
Yeah, exactly.
That is so good.
I bow to the queen. I apologize. I forgot myself.
That's correct. Line. Yeah.
Are your parents still alive?
Yeah.
Find yourself slipping into your parents as a parent now? Or are you conscious?
Slipping into a parent?
Slipping into the mannerisms of your parents as a parent. Or are you conscious enough of their parenting?
I'm quite interested in this answer.
Well, so the more, when I became a parent, I realised that my parents were kind of winging it. And they were just doing the best that they could with three girls, which is a lot. And my dad was working and my mum was, the homemaker and took us and wanted us to achieve to quite a high level, being of that immigrant, idea that we come here to ascend.
Yeah.
And so she...
Have you ever heard it, Polina?
It's true, but when you say that, we've come here to ascend, some mission.
Oh, yeah, it sounds wrong. It sounds evil somehow. It
sounds like the plot of your next Hollywood blockbuster.
We come here to ascend.
Actually, it's just an intimate story about immigrants.
Did you not get that? We come here to ascend. But yeah, so, you know, this driving and the ascension is based on doing music, ballet, speech and drama.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And
we have a Pacific variation of
right.
that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What's, yeah. What yeah. Which sport or law or accounting. But it's school seat.
Nice.
Like, I feel like when we were in high school in the 90s, if you got your school seat.
Yeah, that was the.
That was the. You, yeah, you never mind bursary. bursary was for the elite.
Oh, yeah.
There's something about school CA.
But school
CA. It was like the one to get.
Yeah, right. Or five as well. Like, that's, I mean, that just speaks to the education issues that we have. But if you got all five school C, that was like the cliche growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not only are they a good boy, but good boy, all five school C.
I mean, I really enjoyed school, so that was good. But from age five, my grandma was like, okay, so you need to get a job where you use your brain and not your hands.
Mm.
So the only way you do that is to go to university. So I was like, okay.
Yeah, wow.
I was like brainwashed.
From five?
Oh, yeah. Really young.
I mean, academically, that's a good way to get people thinking, like, about study and that.
Yeah.
It's like it making university seem natural and not some, like, thing which if you do, it's a special thing. It's just a natural
thing.
No,
yeah. She was like, that's, like, the key to how you can get a job where you can just, like, sit there and not have to, like, lift stuff.
Ascension.
And I was like, ascension, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like,
this is how we ascend.
Ascend to a chair.
Yeah, from the
I mean, that just sounds like the title of your book. The Rosane Lang story. Ascend to a chair.
To a chair. Yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Ensure bucket is outside shower before ascending chicken to mouth.
Can I ask, out of curiosity, just because both your families are from Hong Kong, right?
Mm-hmm.
With what's happening in Hong Kong, does that hit with you guys?
Yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, it was definitely it was quite intense the last couple of years because there was just more protests and stuff going on, and then since COVID, they've sort of not been able to protest. But then there's been tons of like arrests and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, it just feels like a bit powerless, I think, basically, because that's basically what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, what can we do? And the powers that be are so, it's just too big to be able to, there's no fight. There's actually no fight to be had because the scale of the...
What they're up against.
Is just... They're probably listening to this conversation. Like, do you know, via our phones or whatever. We can't say anything about... And they're so good at their job of pushing the nationalist idea that... So back in the 90s... I remember going to a Tiananmen Square protest or it wasn't a protest, it was more a march for
like a
democracy. And I went with my parents. And now I'll have arguments with my parents about Hong Kong as China, and it always was China, and you have been brainwashed by the Americans, and the Americans are bankrolling the protesters. And I'm like, okay, I wouldn't put it past America.
Absolutely, yeah. They have a history.
Right. And they're like, you love America and you think America's great. And I was like, I never said that. But do we think China is this all-loving, all-thoughtful thing? And I feel very uncomfortable even talking about it because I know that they're very thorough with their...
research.
If I mean, like, before you speak, Pauline, I'll just notice you have both tensed up on that question. I don't think it's conscious, but your body language, your faces.
It's the only subject that it's the only sort of like news current affairs subject that I can't really talk to my mum about. Like, she just gets really uncomfortable. She's like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And similar to your parents, it's a, you know, they got handed back in 1997. Why is everyone acting like this wasn't always coming?
Mm.
It's been on the cards since 1997. Mm. It belongs to China. All they're doing is disrupting. Mm. She's like, all the young people are doing by protesting is disrupting the lives of the millions of people who are trying to live and trying to make money to continue.
Mm.
What's the point? You know, and it's also like maybe they're of a generation, and I wonder if it's because my parents are of a generation where you don't protest, you don't speak out, you don't talk about politics, you certainly don't go out and march out in public about politics. You just sort of go along with whatever's happening.
Mm.
But I mean, that's what I get from my parents. So.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's funny because right when they started, it felt like the majority of Hong Kongers had joined, you know, that like so many millions of Hong Kongers marched at the beginning.
Mm.
And now it's become a young person's hooligans
fight. Disruptive, violent.
Yeah.
It was when they started burning the train stations, I think. The definitely like some of the older generation in Hong Kong were like, no, this is not what, you know, as long as the protests don't disrupt their daily lives, as long as they can get to work, that's a little bit what it felt like. It was, it started to look like, oh, okay, now it's interrupting me getting to work, being able to earn money. It's such a contentious subject. And it does feel like I remember thinking, oh, now that we've got COVID, we're not going to be able to cover it as much. And that kind of basically is what happened. You know, you're not going to get as much news out of there because everyone's at home in lockdown and they're not able to protest.
And yet China continues its, like, you know, for me, the cinema, that they've just changed their cinema guidelines and basically put their own censorship laws on Hong Kong films. So there's a rich culture of Hong Kong making. And yes, Hong Kong has been colonised.
Mm.
And that's got its own problems with it.
Mm. Hamburgers.
Hamburgers.
Yeah.
Hamburgers.
Those Americans.
Yeah.
Oh, I like what you did there, man.
Yeah.
But now the strictures that you know, China censors put on their own movies now apply to Hong Kong movies.
Mm-hmm.
How is it going to change, you know, like anything that you do about authorities like police, you're not going to be able to make Police Story. You're not going to make Infernal Affairs.
Yeah, it's exactly the two films that came to mind.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can't make those movies with those Chinas because you can't make movies about ghosts.
Mm.
You can't do that because of the Communist Party.
Mm.
And what is that going to do to culture in Hong Kong?
Mm. How do you not stay sane? How do you deal with frustration and disappointment? Like, not necessarily about Hong Kong, but just...
In general.
In general, like, when those emotions come into you.
Frustration and disappointment. I think that the idea is that we can work our way out of it.
Yeah.
That if you just work hard enough, then you'll work your way out of it. And this is another thing which I've just learned, not just, but that this idea that you can work hard and get your way out of anything is a trap, is a story, is a fairy tale that some people tell us. Because the system itself is screwed and this is a way to subjugate people by telling you, oh, you can work hard and you're... But we can't work our way out of discrimination.
Mm.
We can't work our way out of prejudice.
Mm.
We can work our asses off and we'll still get some random stranger yelling at us in the street. So I don't know how I...
other than it'll pass, maybe? Like,
I was gonna say I think that's my thing. It's just that I'm like, everything is temporary. So if it's a shitty feeling or a crappy, you know, just anything that's, if it's like negative, I think my first is like, oh well, it's not gonna last forever. And then it's same with like good things. You're like, this is probably not gonna last forever too, so might as well just like, you know,
enjoy it
while it's happening.
Yeah,
and that seems to work for both, applies to both, I guess. I mean, sorry, that sounds really like, oh, it's fine, get over it. And I don't mean it like that. I think it's just my way of dealing with, if I'm feeling frustrated, I'm just like, okay, just chill, because it'll, in like a day or two, it won't seem like it'll seem like a blip compared to what it does at this moment. Yeah. And I try to do like if I'm making a decision about whether to do something, I'll be like, will I remember it in 5 years? Probably not. Who cares? Don't do it.
Right.
Yeah. Or will I? Maybe. So I'll opt for that. I'll opt for it.
Wow. I was just thinking about like the research and how it shows that we're negatively charged. Like we focus more on negative things than we do on the positive. And that could be evolutionary because...
Like a risk assessment, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because maybe we're more evolutionary successful if we look at the negative. So when bad shit happens, like, and it's in the scheme of things, it's not that big a deal.
Final question, which I ask of everyone who comes in here, because shower is my safe space, and there's food, and you know, it's very lovely. It's been lovely to have you both. Is there anything you guys, either or together, would like to share in the shower while you're here? Anything you guys would like to put on the table?
Share.
Yeah. So any thoughts on mental health or anything from today? Or yeah. There's no wrong answer.
The pressure.
I have to have a good answer. You can't say that to me. You go first.
There's no ducks of the shower.
I must be ducks.
Get a ribbon.
I got a potato chip. It's golden. Is that...
Well, now that you mention it, I became addicted to external validation as a kid. And that's what that ducks shit was about.
Whoa.
Yeah, I got addicted to the straight A's, like that, all the 99%, all that shit.
Yeah.
And I have made a concerted effort to not just quest for that stuff, but it's ingrained.
Yeah.
As you just saw, I'm like, I have to be the winner. Like, I have to get an A+, and I have to get 90%. And it's still in me, but I'm actively trying to be like, it's not important, man. It's not important.
When did you have that realization?
Probably in my 30s.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah, in my 30s.
I think that's pretty normal. I think a lot of your 30s is understanding your teens and your 20s. And like sometimes because people are having kids, but sometimes just because you're midlife. And so you really try and understand that.
It's an equalizer, I think. You know, when I look around me and I say, the people that I love weren't ducks. The people I admire weren't ducks.
But you love them anyway.
I love them anyway.
I'm one of them, and I
was ducks. And I am clearly the best. But the second best wasn't a duck, so it must be okay.
And what kind of things have you done to try and address it? I think you're right. I've met a lot of people over the years who have a similar kind of thing of needing that external... funnily enough, in stand-up comedy... There's a lot of people who really need external validation. But what are some things that you've done?
I think actively trying to, in conversations, not talk about myself.
Right.
Because when you talk about yourself, I think you're looking for a reaction, I think. Well, it's interesting in stand-up comedy because you're on stage and your currency is a reaction. But I think I walked around life like that, and I was like, the art of conversation is really to connect with someone and to ask them questions about themselves
and find connection that way, rather than talk about the things that I've achieved and how good I am at things.
But that's really interesting, of like taking time to be conscious in a conversation, of not talking about yourself and that addiction to validation.
There are different ways, I think, to talk about yourself or to talk about yourself, to connect or to connect with someone. But yes, sometimes if you're telling a story, it's a form of boasting because you're trying to get, you know, you want someone to say you're great.
You got chicken in you.
Oh, that's a good look. I like to keep chicken there. Why? Where do you keep your chicken?
Sometimes you want someone to say you're great. Sometimes you want someone to go, you've got some chicken. Food.
And that's why I love Helena. That's why she keeps me real.
Queen, I've got you.
So sorry, I know you're saying something profound, but no one's going to take you seriously. Now you've got chicken on you.
I can see both your mums deconstructing this episode. Well, your daughter had chicken on. Polina, what about you? Is there anything you'd like to share?
I think I have a very good friend who our catch-ups are always we just talk. We just sit on the couch and talk. We don't ever really do anything. We don't ever go out. I'll just have a cup of tea at hers and we just talk for hours. Mm. And she said something once to me, like a few years ago, that I was like, oh my God, she's absolutely right. And she said, I'm really chill about being intense and you're really intense about being chill.
Wow.
And I was like... Oh my God, you like nailed it. Because she's full on and I'm always like, just calm. Like you're being quite loud and just calm, you know, like you're very intense in your conversation in the cafe. I was like, that's probably why I said her house. And she's like, you're just so intense about being chill. And I think I'm always just like, yep, no problem. And probably in the last only like 5 years, I've gotten to the point where I've been like that for so long, that's my first go-to answer, and then I'm like, I'm really overwhelmed and stressed, but it's my fault because I said it was fine. And I think I'm only like now figuring out when to be like, no, like that's my limit, or because I don't want to come across as not difficult, but I want to be, I come across as like flexible, I suppose, in like a working environment mostly. And I want to be amenable and I want people to not like me. Mm. And I get flashes of like voting for class captain in school. And I'm like, people don't like me. I want to be class captain, but I didn't get voted. And I'm like, it's because I'm not popular. Like, you know, I never chase popularity. But I think in the back of my mind, I'm like, be someone who people like. Mm. Not a pushover or walkover, but in my personality. Mm. And I was like, yeah, I need to just... either embrace the intensity or like just, yeah.
You want to be someone that a builder will stop in the middle of a morning.
And say, you know.
You got to check off the TV. I watched it.
And I just walked out and I was like.
Class captain. Chicken everywhere. Yeah, throwing chicken to the people.
I ain't going to fuck about class captain now.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower is produced for RNZ by Charlie Bleakley of Fruit and Nut Productions. The engineer is Ronnie Poet. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. You can find this podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for the chicken. If you're rating podcasts and you want to rate ours, give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your comfort food and your mental health safe space with me, then you can tweet me on @JamesNorkiusek. If you're experiencing mental health issues and you're in New Zealand, you can text 1737 or go to the RNZ Fried Chicken page and we'll have a list of different mental health practitioners that might be able to assist you. If because of the pandemic you're experiencing COVID-related mental health issues, you can go to www.health.govt.nz. Look for the COVID page and you'll be able to find mental health resources there. Stay safe. Whakatau lava. Matua.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.